Coming up on this week's edition of The Front Page, we talk two big heavyweights of jump racing and flat racing in Dan Skelton and Aidan O'Brien. We'll also talk cause for concern with the declining foal crops and affordability checks, but also cause for celebration with Constitution Hill making his second flat start at Kempton this week. Along to this week's edition of The Front Page, the Racing Post news show with all the talking points from across the world of the sport. I'm your host, Maddie Playle, for today's show. I'm joined on the sofa by Peter Scargill and Lewis Porteous to take us through a busy and interesting week of racing news. Now, without further ado, let's get straight into the show. For many, it might have been quite a subdued weekend on the racetrack, but not so for Dan Skelton. He smashed through the £4 million prize money barrier. That's something that's never been achieved before. And that makes him a 1-6 shot to win his first Trainers' Championship after agonisingly coming up short to Willie Mullins last year. It's been an incredible season for the trainer. He broke his own record for number of winners in a month in November when just shy of earning £1 million itself, and then broke it again in January. He surpassed the British prize money record with Lodosud in the Champion Chase when that horse finished behind Illete Tomps. What is next for the incredibly powerful Skelton team? And they've still got weeks of the championship and the season left. What's in store for Aintree, I wonder? Who are going to be the key runners going forward? But first, let's reflect on just a magnificent achievement, Lewis. I mean, crazy to me that Dan's still in somewhat of the infancy of his training career. You know, it's not been that long since he left Paul Nicholls, and this is something that even Paul could never achieve with the, you know, the likes of Quarto Star and Denman in his yard, Neptune, Collange, Big Bucks, etc. What an achievement.
Yeah, and he's been touched off the last 2 years on the last day. So it shows a sort of a mental resilience and toughness to come back. And he's took a huge step forward this year from sort of earning £3.4 million last year. He's already through the £4 million barrier. So it's a noticeable step forward. And he's sort of pushing the parameters of what is now capable. Like you say, we've still got your Sandowns, your Ayres to come. So what the final figure will be, it's just going to be one that's going to be very hard for anyone else to try and match. But we've been saying for years that the English trainers, British trainers have got to sort of pull the socks up to try and live up to what the Irish are doing. And Dan's proved that that's possible this season. It's just it's an unbelievable achievement. And the start of probably quite a few years of domination, I would have thought.
And he's proved it, Pete, with a very talented squad of horses, don't get me wrong, but there's not been one absolute superstar among them either. So this is a feat of placing, probably more than anything else, do you think?
Yeah, well, I think if you look at this weekend as an example, quite a weekend perhaps, but Skelton is represented everywhere. And really his achievements, or his team's achievements in winning this championship, is an example of bludgeoning the opposition into submission. He's just had so many runners. He's had nearly 50% more runners than the next trainer, Ollie Murphy. He's had 950-odd runners as of this morning. And he's just able to find the right places for these horses. You think horses like Thistle Ask and Panic Attack, who've come through and progressed. They're not winning grade ones. You know, Grey Dawnings is only grade one winner this year. You look at someone like Nicky Henderson, who's won six, or you look at William Mullins during Cheltenham, who came across and was able to, you know, pick off these grade ones. So whether Skelton's achievement is an example of excellence in the sense of the quality of the horses is less, but the skills in managing to get the best out of the horses in his care and the machine turning them over again and again is certainly the case. And to think, you know, 2 years ago, he was sanctioned for misleading the BHA of the George Gently case. Last year, he was pipped on the last day by Willie Mullins. This year, he's going to be champion trainer with all of these records being broken. It's clear progression and, you know, has to be applauded.
And it's momentum, isn't it, I think, in the training game. Once you're fashionable as well, things seem to snowball. So do you think this could be the start of sort of a new dawn, I guess, at the top of the Trainers' Championship and a new dominance of Dan Skelton? Or do you think the likes of Ben Pauling, Ollie Murphy, Paul Nicholls are going to come back and challenge him anew?
Well, it's the point that Lewis has made earlier on that, you know, to compete with what's been coming across from Ireland for the last few years, the British trainers have had to up what they do. So Skelton and his team have shown what's capable in terms of getting the best out of horses and the numbers that can be achieved from that. But But, you know, he's got 200 horses, more than 200 horses in training. So the other trainers don't have that level, and whether they're up to it, I don't know. I mean, Lewis would probably speak to and deal with more national hunt trainers than I would. So I don't know what your experience with that is and how the landscape looks.
I think what it shows, though, is he's got 200, 250 horses. So that surely shows there is an appetite from owners to have horses here. And the argument for so long has been, oh, yeah, the owners are gravitating to Ireland. No, if you have success, they will invest here. I think he's proven that. The other thing about Dan's season is, although he's... You've pointed out a sort of like a grade one wins. He was represented in like the four championship races at Cheltenham Festival, which would have been a first. And inevitably, in time, the winners in those races will come. And the bigger the string gets, you're inevitably going to find quality within that. So I think he will open up a little bit of a gap to the pursuers in the years to come. But that shouldn't be a negative. That should be something for the rest to aim at. Yeah. And we, like you said, Maddie, the Paulins of this world, the Murphys of this world are so ambitious in their own right. Mm. And they're very good with owners. They're good at selling themselves. And hopefully this be a wider trend of more owners coming back to the British yards.
Yeah, I spoke to Brian Drew on Friday about what it's like having a horse with Dan. Obviously, he's got Madara, who won the plate. He's got Panic Attack, who's hopefully going to go to the Grand National. Looks like she probably will get in on the balance of things. And he just said the communication is second to none, really. You know, you give him a call at any time of day. And I said, what happens if you have a difference in opinion? And he was like, yeah, he would absolutely go along with it. But it just doesn't happen very often because we're always on the same page. I mean, sounds like quite a nice experience. And I said to Dan, well, what happens if, you know, do you find that frustrating if you and an owner have a disagreement? And he was like, not at all, because that's what they pay me to do. So that was an interesting insight into sort of behind the scenes of having good horses at those yards. Coincidentally, both those horses are going to go to Aintree. Both of them hopefully going to run over the national fences. Panic Attack in the big one, and Madara is favourite for the Topham as well. Who do you think could be the key players, the key runners for him for the rest of the season, Lewis? I think Panic Attack in the national would have a great chance.
Yeah, she certainly would. A jump in is her asset. A lot of the Cheltenham horses, it sounds like, are going to Aintree, where you have a big team where Grey Dawning, you maybe coming back in trip, you'd think would run well. Lotus Sud could go up in trip. The new Lions book for Aintree. So he's I think in seasons past, he's ran out of steam a little bit at the end. And although he's had a relentless drive this season, he probably didn't start quite as relentlessly through the summer. And I think that's where he's adapted. He's got more horses to run in the better standard races, not necessarily graded races, but the better handicaps. And I think he'll run through the line this time. So I think he'll finish strongly. And the other thing to note is, if Mullins is $2 million behind, does Willie maybe look at the British festivals now to come and think, I'm not going to go gung-ho like I did the last few years and maybe hold a few more back for Punchestown? I think that might be in his thoughts. If so, the British races then become a little bit less competitive, and the person who's going to make the most of that is probably Dan.
Yeah, absolutely fascinating what Dan Skelton has achieved this season. And from a burgeoning great on the jump scene to a very established great on the flat scene, Aidan O'Brien had a very interesting press day last week. We saw Albert Einstein, his top two-year-old, was cut to 7-2 favourite for the 2,000 guineas. Now, O'Brien hasn't won the race since 2019, I think, but this horse has been his big talking horse all along. It seems there's one every season, isn't there, that garners so much hype. It's not been seen since last May when he won the Marble Hill Stakes over 6 furlongs, the Wooden Bassett Colt. But this it just illustrates, Pete, and you touched upon it in a piece last week, the power of Aidan's words, doesn't it? I mean, is he a legitimate Guinness favourite, Albert Einstein?
No, he's a nonsensical Guinness favourite. Like, it doesn't make any sense, right? It doesn't make any sense other than Aidan O'Brien, who's trained more Group 1 winners than anyone, trains...
All these
brilliant horses, has all of this data to say that this is a very good horse. So therefore, I understand when Aidan O'Brien says something, it's going to carry more weight. But this asks you to be favourite for the guineas. He hasn't done anything, including for quite a long time, to suggest that he should be. I appreciate he beat Power Blue when he won the Marble Hill, Group 1 winner. But, you know, he's a shorter price than Stard, who's done more than he's done. He's shorter priced than Gawan, who was champion two-year-old last year for Yulong. He's shorter priced than Zavateri, Eve Johnson Horton's horse that's done brilliantly. It makes no sense. And it's only because Aidan O'Brien said it. And they say, look, come the start of May, if the horse goes and wins, that's fine. But it's not so much that a horse couldn't win the Guineas. It just makes no sense that he's favourite for the Guineas, based purely on Aidan O'Brien say, this is the fastest thing I've ever seen. But Aidan O'Brien says lots of bombastic things. He's got stallions to share, and he's a guy that once you get him going, he gets on a roll with how he talks about his horses. So I just think it's a nonsense. It just shows that people love trainers in particular saying bombastic things about horses.
Well, it's why everyone loves a Cheltenham Festival preview, isn't it? It's never nuance and data and argument. It's this horse can't possibly win, or this horse is the next coming. But it seems like a real source of irritation for you, this one.
It's not irritation. It's disbelief. Okay. It's disbelief that a horse can not run, can run twice within 15 days, win odds on favourite both times, not run for the rest of the year. And because a trainer says, this horse is really good, and I appreciate the trainer's Aidan O'Brien, everyone goes, oh, well, great, there you go, there's your Guineas winner. He's not, like you say, he's not won since 2019. Last year's Guineas meeting, after Charlie Appleby won both the Guineas, everyone's gone, he's gone. Aidan O'Brien's gone. Gone at the game. He's going to have a terrible year. Look at all his horses. And, you know, he ended up having a brilliant year, nearly broke the Group 1 record.
He did.
And Godolphin tailed off. So, you know, he doesn't target his horses at the meeting in the same way. And as I say, it amazes me. But perhaps it shouldn't amaze me. Perhaps I should just get on board with everybody else and row in behind it.
The beauty is we will find out. Lewis, I've been very critical of sort of, maybe I take it too seriously, but O'Brien coming out every season and saying, this is the best horse we've ever had. I mean, with Albert Einstein, it's we've never had one faster. And you have to acknowledge that there, you know, there are reasons for him sort of driving this bloodstock machine. Interestingly, this season, they haven't got Wootton Bassett anymore. Obviously, they're still going to have his progeny for a couple of years to come. But the shape of Ballydoyle and Coolmore is probably going to change again in the next couple of years. I thought it was a very open crop of two-year-olds last year. I mean, we saw that in the Dewhurst with Gawan. He was a surprise winner. What do you make of this recent development that's got under Pete's skin so much?
No, I mean, the first thing to say is he's in the business of making stallions and he's entitled to say what he wants.
And it's good that he says it as well.
It makes it engaging, doesn't it?
It builds a narrative, doesn't it, into the Guineas. So I've got no issue with it. I personally wouldn't be rushing down to the bookies. I'd like to know what the weight of money is. I know it's 9-1, 7-2. What does that equate to? I mean, how much money have the bookmakers really seen and at what quantities? But the key line was speed, speed, speed with this horse. So I'm thinking, he's going to go gungo into a Commonwealth Cup.
But no, don't go on about the Commonwealth Cup. That's another terrible
horse. But the worry would be this. He's hammered home how fast his horse is. And now they're going to go and try and stretch him out in a Guineas. So that really would sound a few alarm bells from a punting perspective, that he's telling everyone this horse's weapon is speed. Yeah, they're going to go to a Guineas, which they've had the likes of Orgas Rodin, City of Troy beaten in the last few years, two other massive talking horses. So I've got zero issue with Aidan talking one up. It's good for the game, gets us chatting, but I'd be worried about a horse that's run twice over six furlongs, not been seen in ages, trying to get out the mile at Newmarket, which hasn't been a happy hunting ground for them.
No.
For the last, God knows how many years now.
No, it has an interesting pedigree. Like I say, he is by Wootton Bassett, who, you know, he's got Al Riffer, who's won a classic over a mile and six, but he tends to get speedy horses as well, and by a very fast mare, Yet, who won at Dundalk, I believe, over either five or six furlongs. So there is a lot of speed in that pedigree. What about the rest of Aidan's sort of crop to go to war with this year? Well, he's got Precise, who's looking like she'll go for the 1,000 Guineas. Diamond Necklace, maybe the French Guineas. The Derby, he's got the beautiful Pierre Bonnard. He's going to follow the Delacroix route. He likes Montreal as a dark horse. We're talking about older horses now. We go Mini Hawk to the Tattersall's Gold Cup, Lambourne Coronation Cup. Scandinavia is going to find his way to the Ascot Gold Cup via the sort of Kyprios route of the Savile Beg. What sort of season do you think it's going to be for O'Brien, Pete?
Well,
I mean, listing that.
You think it's going to be terrible after all that?
No, it's just it's remarkable, although perhaps it shouldn't be, the sheer quality of horses there. And when you're going on about, you know, Precise and Diamond Necklace, for as an example, I mean, Precise was brilliant when she won the Filly's Mile. That turn of foot she showed to win that day was so jaw-droppingly good. And then Diamond Necklace is this horse that Christophe Soumillon's besotted by when she won the...
I wonder how much say he's had in getting her to go back to France. And then, I mean, Ryan could well be on board, but it's interesting, that for me.
Well, quite. And I suppose she's, you know, if you're proven over course and distance, it's always an advantage. And they always like to split these horses up to maximise. I mean, every year, a bit like we were talking about with Dan Skelton, you know, every year Aidan O'Brien is the benchmark, isn't he? They've got the best bred horses, the best system, they know what they're doing, they can travel horses all around the world with ease. So everybody else has to get up to that level. But if you look at the betting for any of these races, you see that they're dominated by Cornwall horses. And then if you've got horses like Job Dead Gorgeous, he came out yesterday at Nace, half-sister to Glen Eagles. Now, that hadn't even run last year. So what's she, you know, what else have they got that's going to come through? And that's before all the two-year-olds come through as well. I mean, I think at Ascot last year, when they dominated the two-year-old races, the paddock watchers were saying, God, you know, you've seen all these British two-year-olds. Mm. Then Aidan O'Brien's horses coming in, they're just a different calibre of horse. And that's, you know, 40-plus years of cultivating incredible bloodlines. So he's going to win lots of races. But he's not going to win the Guineas with Albert Einstein, because it makes no sense, Lewis.
What about Gustada, Puerto Rico? They've both got
absolutely
got very sort of solid profiles themselves, and progressive last season. And in another year, either one of them could be favourite.
Had quite a few horses to be injured last season as well, didn't he? I'm trying to remember the name of the Norfolk winner he had that was really, really fast.
Charles Darwin.
That was the one. He'll be back this year. Mini Hawk again. I guess if there's been any recent criticism, it's been that the older horses have been a bit weak, but that doesn't look like it's going to be the case this year with Mini Hawk coming back, Scandinavia over the stay and trip, Jean Bruegel, etc., Lamborn, etc.
Seems quite intent on making Mini Hawk maybe a 10 furlong horse while they're looking between the lines. Tassels, Gold Cup, Prince of Wales mentioned. That'd be interesting seeing her come back. I always had her as a strong stayer at a mile and a half, but I'm a big fan and she's definitely one to look forward to back in training.
Be good to see Darius and Mini Hawk round two, wouldn't it, after the arc?
Absolutely.
Look forward to that. Great to see him back in training as well. On to a bit of sort of sadder, more troubling news now, and that's that Tattersalls have aired their concern at the declining foal crops. Now, we know that data showed a 9.5% drop in the number of foals born in Britain and Ireland in 2025. That's the most significant drop year on year in a decade. Tattersalls director spelled it out as a principal risk and uncertainty in Companies House documents last week, as well as flagging affordability and tax rises as issues that they are going to have to face. ARC Chief Executive Martin Cruddas called on the government to intervene when it comes to those frictionless affordability checks, saying that they will not work. That story, there was more information from the Betting and Gaming Council about how those affordability checks are not going to prove effective. Two slightly different issues here, Pete, but sort of treading on the same turf at the same time. It's just not a great sign, is it? I mean, we want high quality horses to be trained in Britain, even more so than Ireland, I think, in many ways. And we've seen recent initiatives, you know, the likes of the Junior National Hunt hurdles come in. They've done tweaks to the Novice Chase programme, just two examples over jumps. We've also had the training fees credit scheme that we've heard of in recent weeks. So it's still a very worrying time, though, when you have the sort of numbers of that magnitude on the decline, isn't it?
Yeah, well, they all feed into the same issue, which is there's a lack of desirability, or there's a lack of ability for people to participate effectively in horse racing at the moment, either as owners or as bettors. So the reason the Tattersalls documents were interesting was the first time they'd listed the foal crop as a risk. There's been a lot of talk about the foal crop over the last few years, primarily from the Thoroughbred Breeders Association and their chair, Philip Newton, who's behind the Project Pace super premierisation endeavour. And the point of that is to try and make it more appealing for people to breed horses. If it's more appealing for people to breed horses, they'll breed more horses. If they breed more horses, people buy more horses, and that's the way around it's supposed to work. But at the moment, it's not doing that. And there doesn't appear to be a fast enough acknowledgement of what's going on and a way to turn it around. So it's sliding that way. And obviously, if there's fewer horses racing, Maddie, there are fewer horses to bet on, and the fields will be smaller, and that's less appealing, which is one problem in terms of funding racing.
Of course.
But additionally, if you want to have a bet on horse racing, and you are meeting with obstacles and barriers because your bookmaker is asking you to provide documentation to have a bet, then you're either not going to bet or you're going to go elsewhere. And that is the point that was raised by the Betting and Gaming Council and raised by Martin Cruddas. The affordability checks pilot that was being implemented by the Gambling Commission has thrown up repeated issues with these checks not being frictionless. And they have to be frictionless. That's what the government has told the Gambling Commission. Mm. They've shown not to be frictionless, and they're pushing ahead with it regardless. So if that's the case and more people are going to get caught up in this, it's going to be a problem. And I would recommend anyone, if they get the chance to...
Oh, look at
to
this.
Read Lee Mottishead's column, this column, in today's Racing Post. Can you see it? That column. It tells you all you need to know. Him and Bill Barber have done excellent work on that this week. And it just shows that this will be a real blow for betting on racing if these checks come in and they are not frictionless.
Mm. Absolutely. And it's a familiar theme on this show with affordability checks and the damages that they propose to the sport. Lewis, I mean, even from a personal case study, I've always said one of my dreams would be one day to breed my own racehorse. Every single person I've spoke to about this says, you're mad, it's a ridiculous idea. You know, and they don't know my financial situation, but a JP McManus I am not. So to me, that speaks volumes. I wonder if all of these changes are going to make the sport, even with the training credit scheme, more elitist, and whether the gap between the sort of the real top boys and the top owner breeders and the people in syndicates, whether that's just going to widen because it's just not very accessible.
Yeah,
to breed a horse, unfortunately.
That's one of many worries, isn't it? Mm. I mean, there's got to be incentives for breeders of all sizes to continue with what they're doing. I think it was good that Tatsors came out when they released their financial results, because the bottom line was they made 8 million profit and off the back of a very good sales season. But it's important that people speak up and flag these things, because they're not getting any better. And we've still got this gargantuan fixture list to feed. And if the bottom dries up with the lack of foals, then we're just going to be running around with uncompetitive races that nobody wants to bet on.
It's not even the bottom level. I mean, if you have breeding fewer horses, you're going to get fewer good horses. Mm. There's just
So
these better races are also not going to be appealing. So people like to go and watch good horses, which we may come on to in a minute, about people liking to go watch good horses.
We might. Someone's read the running order I sent out.
But if there's, you know, we've had the positivity around crowds over the last few months.
Yeah.
But if there's fewer good horses racing, people like watching good horses, then that's going to counteract all the work that's going into that. So I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, fine. Absolutely, you're spot on. But regarding the affordability checks, I mean, there's been no update on this pilot since May of last year. Like, the Gambling Commission have repeatedly failed to prove that these checks can be truly frictionless. And until there's concrete evidence that it will not impact punters going about their business, then it's got to be paused. Mm. It's ridiculous, really. It's just going to... And the bottom line is, the more people that do get caught up with it, the more people start looking for alternative ways to bet. And that inevitably forces people to the black market, the unregulated market, which totally flies in the face of what this whole... what affordability checks are bought into to protect punters. There's no protection in the black market. Mm. So, as Lee points out today, how can a government endorse something that is going to ultimately leave people with less protection and feed a black market and potentially crush an industry like our own?
Yeah, I think you've hit the nail on the head there. If anything, we're seeing more and more evidence, not of how frictionless they are, but how much friction is involved when you're trying to place a bet, which contradicts that. Pete very nicely made a segue there onto great horses.
Good horses.
Good.
Not great horses.
Oh, okay.
He's a great jumps horse.
Not yet, he might be. Of course, any idea who we're talking about? Might be a horse running at 7:30 this week on Wednesday. Constitution Hill is going to run for the second time on the flat in a mile and a half novice stakes at Kempton. I think it's going to be an easy race this time. I don't think he's got as much in the way of opposition. We've had the final declarations in just before we came in here. Interesting that Ryan Moore's going to be booked on. Matt Chapman didn't like that. He thinks, well, Ryan's going to get a first-class seat to see how he can beat Constitution Hill in these great big races for the rest of the season. Obviously, it's not a Friday night live fixture this time around, so it remains to be seen how many people will flock to Kempton to see Constitution Hill. I might be one of them. Lewis, what do you make of Chapper's theory that Ryan's a bad booking because it gives an insight into any potential sort of chinks in his armour?
Well, under that argument, Sir Michael Stout would never have used Moore, would he? I mean, when he was known, he had no issues with it. I mean,
mic dropped.
I couldn't really. I understand the point Matt was getting at, but I didn't agree. I just think, speaking to Nikki yesterday, they're still not sure in their heads of the route they may take with Constitution Hill going forward. And they want to get the best opinions in the game of, look, how good could this horse potentially be? What sort of trip should we be running at? Etc, etc. And I think Moore's recognised as giving the best feedback in the game. He's available. It's only the horse's second run in a novice. I think that, it makes complete sense to put him on there, get his advice. It wouldn't really bother me. I mean, we don't know he's going to be. What we're saying, he's going to be running against Minnie Hort later in the season. No, it's not. They're probably going to go down lucrative handicap route. So, where Ryan could even be available. I would go for the best available and get the advice now, and then you can map out a clearer path of where you're going. So, but the great thing is Constitution Hill. Every time he runs, produces this. These talking points, and we need horses to talk about, otherwise we'd all be out of a job. So I have no issue with anyone having a different opinion, but if Moore's available, you take him.
Yeah. This horse has just fried my brain a bit, Pete, because I think, yes, he was exceptional over jumps, but for a 9-year-old by Blue Brazil to record a Racing Post rating of 103, I think it was, at Southall, is insanity. Now, I agree with Lewis. I mean, I don't think he can be a Group 1 horse, maybe not even a group horse. But nevertheless, the facts don't lie. And what he did last time was pretty sensational. Are you expecting to do the same thing this week?
I mean, he caught me by surprise how good he was at Southall, for all that it was a specially adapted race to allow him to shine. You know, he's a 9-year-old gelding who'd, you know, his background is in jumps. You know, for him to be able to do that, you know, brought a bit of a spark and excitement to what's going on. So will he be able to do the same at Kempton? I wonder if they'll try and learn something different about him this time around. Because, I mean, obviously the race at Southern was a prelude to whether he was going to go jumping again, wasn't it? So whether they'll try and do something different to try and learn a little bit more about him and what route he's going to take, like Lewis says, you know, trip and all that sort of stuff. I wonder whether that will be what their objective is, as much as trying to win the race. You know, what is the best route forward with this horse, which is why you get Ryan Moore. The appetite for Constitution Hill is huge. I mean, our readers love reading about him. They love to hold an opinion on him. You know, he's not a horse that's going to be winning the Gold Cup at Royal Ascot, unless there's a monsoon. But he's a horse who's going to, you know, enrich the flat season by having him around. So look, we'll see what happens. And the advantage of him running on the flat at Kempton, as well as over jumps, is that when there's a housing estate there, we'll have a Constitution Hills garden to look after, won't we? A nice area for the houses to be.
What an optimistic note to end on, Pete. If I've learned anything in the last couple of years, it's not to underestimate Constitution Hill. Now, we hope you enjoy the action this week and indeed on Wednesday night. Make sure to get in touch in the comments. Let us know what you think of the talking points this week. Some worrisome, some cause for celebration. And we'll see you again in a week's time. Thanks for joining us.